The doctor sat still behind the wheel, shaking with shock and fear and adrenaline. The Cornhuskers climbed out of their vehicles. Big guys, red jackets. They walked toward the doctor's stalled truck, taking it slow and easy, one from the left, one from the right. They stood for a second, one each side of the pickup's cab, still and quiet in the afternoon gloom. Then one opened the passenger door and one opened the driver's door. The guy at the passenger door stood ready to block an escape, and the guy at the driver's door reached inside and hauled the doctor out by the collar of his coat. The doctor went down like a dead weight, straight to the blacktop, and the guy hauled him up again and hit him hard in the gut, and then turned him around and hit him twice more, low in the back, right over his kidneys. The doctor fell to his knees and puked bourbon on the road. The guy who had been waiting at the passenger door walked back to his vehicle and parked it where it had been before. Then he put the doctor's truck right behind it. He rejoined his buddy, and between them they wrestled the doctor up into the cab of the first guy's truck. Then they drove away, one on the right, one on the left, with the doctor jammed between them on the three-person bench, shaking and shivering, his chin on his chest. In Las Vegas, Saphir dialed his phone, and his guy answered, in Rossi's office, six blocks away. Saphir said, "New developments. I'm sending you two to Nebraska. I'll fax the details to the airport." His guy said, "Okay." Saphir said, "Rossi's guys will meet you at the hotel. Mahmani is sending guys, too. The six of you will work together until the stranger is down. In the meantime, try and get something going with the Duncans. Build a relationship. Then take Rossi's guys out. That way, we're one step closer to the motherlode. We can double our margin." His guy said, "Okay. And if you get the chance, take Mahmani's guys out, too. I think I can get next to his customer. I mean, where else can he get stuff like this? We could maybe quadruple our margin." His guy said, "Okay, boss." The Cornhuskers drove south, 5 fast miles, and then they slowed and turned into the Duncan's shared driveway. The doctor looked up at the change of speed and direction and moaned a strangled, inarticulate sigh and closed his eyes and dropped his head again. The guy on his right smacked an elbow in his ribs. He said, "You need to get that voice working better, my friend, because you've got some explaining to do." They took it slow all the way up to the houses, formal and ceremonial, mission accomplished, and they parked out front and got out and hauled their prize out after them. They marched him to Jacob Duncan's door and knocked. A minute later, Jacob Duncan opened it up, and one of the Cornhuskers put his hand flat on the doctor's back and shoved him inside and said, "We found this guy using the truck we lost. He put his own damn plates on it." Jacob Duncan looked at the doctor for 10 long seconds. He raised his hand and patted him gently on the cheek. Pale skin, damp and clammy, lumps and bruises. Then he bunched the front of the doctor's shirt in his fist and dragged him farther into the hallway. He turned and pushed him onward through the dark depths of the house toward the kitchen and back. Their prisoner in the system. Jacob Duncan turned back to the Cornhuskers. "Good work, boys," he said. "Now go finish the job. Find Reacher. He's on foot again, clearly. If the doctor knows where he is, he's sure to tell us soon, and we'll let you know. But in the meantime, keep looking." Roberto Cassano was still in Jacob Duncan's kitchen. Angelo Mancini was still in there with him. They saw the sad sack doctor stumble in from the hallway, all drunk and raggedy and terrified, with Mancini's earlier handiwork still clearly visible all over his face. Then Cassano's phone rang. He checked the screen and saw that it was Rossi calling, and he stepped out the back door and walked across the weedy gravel. He hit the button and raised the phone, and Rossi said, "Complications." Cassano said, "Such as?" "I had to calm things down at this end. It was getting out of control. I had to talk to people, change a few perceptions. Long story short, you're getting reinforcements. Two of Safir's guys and two of Mahmani's. That should shorten the process." "Initially," Rossi said. "But then it's going to get very difficult. A buck gets 10, they're coming with instructions to cut us out of the chain. Mahmani is probably looking to cut Safir out, too. So don't let any of them get close to the Duncans. Not for a minute. Don't let the Duncans make any new friends. And watch your step as soon as the stranger is down. You're going to have four guys gunning for you." "What do you want us to do?" "I want you to stay alive and in control." "Rules of engagement?" "Put Safir's guys down, for sure. That way we remove the link above us. We can sell direct to Mahmani at Safir's prices."
"Okay."
"And put Mahmani's guys down, too, if you have to, for self-defense. But make sure to make it look like Safir's guys or the Duncans did it. I still need Mahmani himself. There's no wiggle room there. I have no access to the ultimate buyer without him."
"Okay."
"So leave right now. Pull back to the hotel and lie low. You'll meet the others there. Probably very soon. Make contact and make a plan."
"Who's in charge?"
"The Iranians will claim they are, but they can stick that where the sun don't shine. You know the people and the terrain. Keep on top of it, and be very careful."
"Okay, boss," Cassano said.
And 2 minutes later, he and Mancini were back in their rented blue Impala, heading south on the Arrow Straight two-lane, 60 miles to go. The white van was still on Route 3, still in Canada, still heading east, more than halfway across Alberta, with Saskatchewan up ahead. It had just skipped a right turn on Route 4, which led south to the border, where the modest Canadian blacktop ribbon changed to the full-blown majesty of U.S. Interstate 15, which ran all the way to Las Vegas and then Los Angeles. The change of status in what had once been the same horse trail was emblematic of the two nations' sense of self, and as well as that, it was taken to be a very dangerous road. There was an obvious artery, with two big prizes at the end of it, and so it was assumed to be monitored very carefully. Which was why the white van had passed up the chance of its speed and convenience, and was still laboring east on the minor thoroughfare, toward a small town called Medicine Hat, where it intended to finally turn south and lose itself in the wild country around Pukalki Lake, before finding a nameless, rutted track that ran deep into the woods and all the way to America.